You know how to introduce me. Don't play like that.
Okay. Did you guys know Lee has a band called the Miller Lite Orchestra?
Pretty
cool.
Good name.
Pretty cool.
Playing live here in Pier next week. Make sure you plug that.
Fort Pier. 2 weeks from now, the 28th.
Fort Pier.
Live at the Hop?
Yeah. Or what are you doing? Is it 2 weeks? I thought it was. No, that's the after party.
Yeah. Previously on Dakota Town Hall.
I don't know. I mean, I tell my leadership team this all the time. This plan might not work. This might be a dumb plan, but it's a plan. We're going to try.
Well, you know, you got a harder lift on the house, too. Senate's a little easier to govern, you know, due respect.
Yeah, I mean, they're all just tightly under the thumb of Casey Crabtree and Lee Schoenbeck. You know,
they have
free reign, free will over in the house. Everyone's their own man. Merry band of misfits, all just trying to do some good in this crazy world.
I believe my dad refers to it as a well-oiled machine over in the Senate.
Welcome to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly political podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of South Dakota's most listened to political podcast. It is Dakota Town Hall with Jake in the east. I am Murdoch in the west. And fella, we are fully slated today.
Well, we sure are. It's the first week of Lent for us Catholics. So we had to bring on one of my favorite Catholics in the Capitol. Austin Goss is joining us, the leader of our Hot Goss series. And then from STPB.
No meat today. No meat today.
No. Okay,
Austin,
actually,
Hot Goss.
Before I introduce Lee Strubinger, I had bought everything to make birria yesterday. Like, I was going to make a great birria, like, for tacos.
Can you
and,
make
like,
that with fish, or what do you do?
Nope. And I woke up this morning, and I was like, it's Friday in Lent, so now I have to sideline that until the weekend, which is a huge bummer for my morning. But from SDPB is Lee Strubinger joining us as well. It's our...
Yeah, we've got... Nice to have a couple reporters on the show here. Right on.
Yeah. You guys actually know what they're talking about, right?
Lee and Public Broadcasting have a podcast called Short Walk. It's about our Attorney General and all of the happenings. We'll be getting into that. But first, Jake, let's get into a full slate of legislative activity this week.
Sure is. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with, how about the China Ag Land, since sure. we've got Hot Goss on with us. So, you know, Austin, you're doing an incredible job. I get your emails every day about your stories, and I find them to be, you know, really well done. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, thanks, let's dude. Let's go into your stories. The another push to address foreign ag land purchases inching toward Governor Noem's desk. This is kind of round two of our foreign ag bills, right?
This one's going to get signed, yeah?
No, sure, that one will easily pass. Obviously, it's got to go over to the Senate, but where it failed last year. But that was it's a completely different bill. This is like a completely scaled back, watered down, if
last
you will,
year
completely
was,
different.
Last year was when your old man was like yipping about the Box Elder trailers or something, right?
Yeah,
isn't
the double
wide
Box
Elder.
Yeah. Yep.
They were that was the one that created a commission. It was kind of a cluster, and if in that committee, I remember, I think I was on that week actually with you guys, like right around then. Mm-hmm. They had like every ag group under the sun came out and opposed it, and this year none of them are opposing it, and that's pretty much that's how it goes. I mean, if you've got like the soybean and the corn people and the ag and the stock growers coming out and opposing these kinds of bills, and they're going to go down. The fact that they're out of it, which I think is a credit to, House Majority Leader Mortensen. I think he worked really, really, really hard on that over the summer. Over the past year, not just the summer, but I know he's really put a lot of legwork into that. And certainly that was the governor's priority, but he's been the one to really push it.
And the gist of this bill is that it basically limits North Korea, Venezuela, China, Cuba, Russia, and Iran to the purchase of 160 acres of agricultural land in the state. Is that the gist of it?
Bans them, I believe it bans them, rightly, and then it
unless for research purposes, that's where the 160
it, yeah,
acres absolutely. Comes in.
Oh,
for research purposes, yeah.
Okay, but otherwise they can't
yeah,
purchase
that's
it.
What it
so, like,
to farm.
North Korea can technically buy 140 acres of research corn.
Yes.
Yeah, research corn.
Cool. Right on. Oh, very good.
I would love to try a little bit of North Korea research corn.
Found the title of this episode.
Might glow a little bit.
But yeah, no, that'll fly through. I think that'll get to the governor. I bet that's to the desk by next week. I bet they push it in the Senate.
Some of the bigger bills. Some of the bigger bills this week. I guess the probably maybe the one of, that with the most attention was the contracts and appointments finally being settled. Yeah, I don't know. That's not really a bill though, is it? That's just that was a court decision and appointments being made.
Yeah, the court decision. It's funny. I actually thought about you guys because the court decision dropped like Friday at 4.
Yeah,
I assume probably shot this
right
about
after
time
we
last
lost.
Week.
Huge bummer. Like
that's like the
story.
Worst time.
Yeah,
I know. You just miss it, and then it just gets buried over the weekend and through the week. And no, that was massive news. It's funny. I actually asked at the press conference yesterday if they kind of thought that they would probably try to do something in the future. And I have a story about that tomorrow. Kind of just is there legislation maybe that needs to come as a result of this to maybe work around the edges of this whole thing. And I think that probably by next year, we'll see someone try to do something to, I don't know if the word's.
Oh, we lost him. It looks like he's about to sneeze.
It does look like he's about to sneeze.
Screenshot.
Sorry about that.
You're all
right. No worries. My question to both you, Lee, and Austin, were you guys surprised? Because I kind of thought they were going to punt on this issue and not really answer the question. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
That was my thought, too, at least when I heard the oral arguments. And that was kind of the first time I had ever sat through a Supreme Court kind of hearing like that. So I don't know sort of everyone's style there, but it really did seem like they were hesitant to kind of weigh in on this. And then they really went with the legislature's argument, which was that asphalt surfacing and pits were really unworkable and they conflicted with sort of earlier rulings with Norbeck 1 and Norbeck 2. And they ultimately said, when you vote on the general appropriations bill, that's not authorizing a specific contract. And so therefore it doesn't, those specific cases just don't really apply here.
Austin, is that what you
I thought they were going to punt on it also. I thought they were probably going to just say, without a plaintiff, we can't really say because it's too theoretical and you're posing this really theoretical situations to us. We can't. And if you look at the decision that the governor had given them, I think it was 9 questions mm-hmm. and they didn't even really answer them line by line because I think they wanted to, I'm not a lawyer, but I think they kind of wanted to stay away from getting into like super, super, super theoretical situations, which is what those were. I mean, they're not too theoretical because they could happen. It could happen that a foster parent wants to run for the legislature and it would be stupid to exclude that person from being able to do that. But they seemed to want to stay away from the theoreticals.
It seems like the best circumstances possible for the legislature is the best outcome, I guess, for them, right? This is what they wanted.
Best outcome is putting someone from Sioux Falls into District 35. Is that what's happening? That's the best outcome?
Well, the thing that I think that's like interesting as well is that, you know, the appearance, I mean, I feel like the outward appearance is that like, oh, it looks like legislators and lawmakers want to get their hands at, you know, money that is appropriated in the general bill. And I think that kind of perception is really misplaced because the function and sort of operation of state government is so totally different from when we actually approved our constitution back in mm-hmm. the day. It's just completely different. Like when you think about how broad the retirement system is in the state and how that could be an indirect benefit, as it says in the constitution. Yeah, it's just so incredibly broad. And I think this clarification will, like Austin said, I expect some lawmakers to kind of look at it going forward. There might be some changes, but it was an interesting ruling, and I think the legislative lawyers kind of came out on top with that one.
And you look, I mean, listen back to our. Go ahead, Austin.
Go ahead. No, I was just gonna say real quick. I mean, it would just be so silly, and I think I said this the last time I was on about when we were kind of predicting what it might look like. It would be really, really silly to stop a former teacher from running because they get a retirement plan. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that if you take that thing to its logical extreme, you'd be doing. That's stupid. You want former teachers to run for the legislature in all reality. So.
And to Lee's point, when you listen back to our governor series, the very beginning, I learned quickly that, you know, it was like 10 dudes when they first started this state. It wasn't a bunch of people and it wasn't a whole huge, you know, giant group of different departments that were being funded. It was much smaller when the constitution was first written.
Right.
So it's just a different circumstance. And I think it's a good way of looking at it going forward with the general bill.
So let's move to pipelines, fellas.
Yeah.
That's the other kind of, you know, kumbaya of the week, it seems.
Yeah.
Austin, seemed like you were, you must have typed the word pipeline 18 times yesterday.
Yeah, I think if I typed, I was thinking yesterday when they started talking about pipelines and the press conferences that if I have to do another pipeline story because of the press conferences, I'm going to throw myself off the rotunda. it's just, I'm so sick of it, dude. It was funny, Ellis called me this, Jonathan, of course, my boss and colleague, he called me this week, and he's like, after he read one of my stories to edit, he's like, do we really need to keep doing these pipeline stories? I said, yeah, we probably do. It sucks because there's like a gajillion bills.
It's not. It's just not hot goss. You know what I mean?
No, it's not hot goss. That's the problem. I mean, I need like a breast milk scandal. I can't get by on these. That's what happens. If I don't get someone to do something stupid, I'll do it myself. And make my own hot goss.
Yeah, like a phone call, right?
Let's try it this way. Without boring us all to tears and without having to do, you know, 10 minutes, give us 90 seconds of pipeline.
I could give you 15 seconds. Summit want pipeline, landowner say bad. so lawmakers give money, landowner. That's the summary. There you go.
That's the most succinct pipeline story I've heard in 2 years.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to publish today. It's really funny. It's like Groundhog Day. You walk in there, and I get it. I understand why people want the pipeline. I understand why people are pissed about it. I understand both sides of this thing. I mean, I know that's cliche to say, but I mean it. You walk in, it's just Groundhog Day. It's the same 250 people who have the ability to show up to these things, which, you know, I don't think is representative of any sort of consensus. It's just the people who are the most fired up. And again, I understand why. And then you have the same lobbyists, you have the same points. It's all the same arguments. It doesn't matter what the bill is. It doesn't matter if it's a condemnation lawsuit
described,
we don't think you should get eminent domain.
You just described abortion. You just described guns. You just described pipelines.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? You just described. Described one issue
the
politics.
The difference is, though, this is very much condensed into like a year of this.
That's
or a year
true.
And a half of this. That's the difference, right?
Yeah, like, this argument is high volume.
Just so high volume. I was at the District 2 Cracker Barrel last weekend, and it was like an hour and a half, maybe a 2 hour Cracker Barrel, hour at least on pipelines. I mean, we started on pipelines, came back to pipelines. It was just constant. So people care about it. That's the thing. People want
to
talk about
it. Well, I mean, you're right to your point. I mean, I feel I was doing a story about drag shows a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, I've done probably 4 drag show stories in South Dakota, which again is not a commentary on how I feel or don't feel about drag shows. I've personally never been to one yet. But I'm just like, holy smokes, this is my 4th drag show story.
Well, I mean,
since I've gotten to,
let's move to drag shows then. Drag shows were back into the news this week again.
Yeah, you know what's the funniest thing I've ever seen?
Why is it the drag show people trying to show up and like save drag shows, or is somebody always like trying to ban a drag show? Like, why are we talking so much about drag shows?
I think where we got here, I think SDSU really, really kind of screwed the pooch when they did the 8, and you know, it's important to note that the Board of Regents has since banned kids from going to obscene content, but I think SDSU really screwed the pooch when they let that under 18 drag show happen a couple of years ago, and I think that this is
could one say maybe that we overreacted to a bunch of kids doing dumb things as they are inclined to do when they're kids in college?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there's probably some truth to that, but I also think, you know, obviously there's an administrator who signed off on that, and, you know, it reflected, and I'm not saying this is my opinion, of course, but I think it reflected poorly on the administration at SDSU, and this is personal now. I mean, you know, a lot of times before when these kinds of bills would come up, well, you don't have any examples, or this isn't happening here, and now you can say, well, no, it is, and it has happened here, and that's changed the narrative. You know, what's funny about that, the one that's come up, there was... and it's just ironic, and it was really funny to me. You had the vote on the floor was all the Democrats vote against it. Every Republican except for one.
Yeah.
One Republican.
That's kind of why I want to talk about this.
It's the one who got appointed on Saturday. I'm
going to call that the old gnome strike one vote.
I know. I was like, holy smokes. I mean, that was very brave of her.
Good for you, Kristen Condit. High five from me.
Because I got to imagine they talked about it in caucus a lot, and I'm sure she got a got a feeling where the caucus was going to be on this, and she voted no. I'm like, holy smokes. It was a real, like, what? I thought maybe she was clicked the wrong button. I was curious to see, but she voted no.
Well, that's that new District 32 right there. So
yes, it is.
She's planning on running again. You know, there might be some. I don't know if Representative Konzen is or not. But
she's on the record for saying no.
Totally new district than when she was in there before. Is that I think we'll get into it a little bit later. I've kind of been sort of doing other things, but are we talking about Carr's bill?
Yes.
So that's the one.
That's the one that prohibits, like, you know, explicit sort of acts in front of people, right? And so
on campus.
And so one of the questions that Democrats really have about that, and then sort of as we look at the sort of rejection of the stealthing condom bill, one of the things that Democrats are really kind of wondering is, like, aren't those already prohibited in a public space? And then, you know, if the argument against the stealthing bill is that something like that is already covered under the state law, they're wondering, how does that logic sort of apply when we're looking at both of these issues where you go with one and you don't go with the other? I think that's an interesting standard there.
Right. Well, and the other thing, the piece with the drag shows is it's very much a First Amendment thing as well. I mean, you can't deny that. I mean, I agree. Minors should not be at drag shows. I think they are inherently a sexual activity. I have a hard argument saying they're not.
You ever been to a drag show? Who on this call has been to a drag show? Raise your hand. It's awesome. They're fun. They're not that sexual. I've been to one in downtown Orlando. It was one of the most fun times ever. It was a hoot. No one, you know what I mean? No one tried to take me home. It was just, it was a show. Is it goofy? Is it out of the Overton window of norm? 1,000%. But, like,
I just don't think minors should be at them.
It was at a bar. There was no kids there. I can hear that. But I don't. But I also think there's, you know, Carr's acting like there's drag shows kicking their way into middle schools and making sure people passes around the cup so they can get funded. Come on. This is insane.
Carr, I mean, it is worth noting, I guess, to your point, that there's been, this is the third bill related to this just this session. And
yes.
I think
it's an election year time waster. It's also stupid. It's my stupid bill of the week.
I get that, but I guess I would say, you know, the other two didn't even make it out of committee, and one of them went to that committee and didn't make it out of that. The House State Affairs.
The fact that this has a chance to be discussed on a floor at all is ridiculous. But it's an election year, and we're protecting the kids.
I think Carr is one of the smarter, better lawmakers in the entire Capitol, and
I don't disagree.
Yeah, I think he's written a bill that was obviously marginally better than its similar ones, if you will, which is, I think it was a Freimuller and Representative Perry were the other two, and he got it out of committee, like, without any Republicans falling off. I mean, so whatever he's saying, he's saying it right.
Let me try to make it this point. This is one of these topics where, like, independent, normal Republicans who don't live and die by being a Republican their entire life, they hear this things and they're like, oh, it's still nonsensical. I'll punch back in when it's not a dumpster fire. I'm not asking anybody to take a position on it. I'm simply saying, if this is one of the topics South Dakota Republicans want to make that they think they need to put a bill in every year, three times a year, it makes normal, non-political people go, ugh.
Yeah, I get it.
That's what gets the base really going, right? And we've seen a lot of these bills, whether it's related to drag shows or whether it's related to various kind of issues with transgender people and transgender youth. This is what really lights up the base and gets people, you know, active and involved. And, you know, to your point, I think this is also why we're seeing efforts by Senator Schoenbeck to sort of bring up this idea that's in Senate Bill 13, which is the moving certain constitutional officer elections from the convention to the primary.
Great segue.
Excellent.
Yeah,
let's talk about that.
Yeah, I wanted to get here. The bill that never seems to die, right? Or the constant resurrection of changing our conventions. So this one basically would take the lieutenant governor to the governor's appointment. It would take the AG SOS out of the convention. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, make sure I get that right. So it's currently, where is that landing right now? Where are we at with that bill?
It'll be on the Senate floor Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay. And we'll likely pass the Senate floor, I would guess.
Seems like it.
It'll pass. Yeah.
I mean, it's dead in the House, but.
House floor is where I'm watching it for sure.
And specifically, the bill has changed a little bit from other iterations, like the one that was in the House and died on the House floor. Was the one, this one specifically allows parties to choose whether or not they want to do. No. If someone doesn't run in the primary, they can still appoint a convention. That's
very good.
Is,
this
right?
One, right? This is one of them topics Lee texts us about
Democratic
in the morning.
Democratic Amendment. That's the yeah. Democrat Party. That's the faux convention amendment, I like to call it. It's basically like they can kind of wait and see what happens, or if they don't have anybody crop up, they can go to the convention. And basically, I mean, in theory, they could basically have a normal convention. My problem with that amendment, and I mean, I think this is any Republican can kind of see the argument on this is, okay, let's say we have our convention in 22 and we throw up NAPVIG, right? Or whatever. And they're watching, or NAPVIG wins a primary, that like someone like that, that you know, Senator Schoenbeck's used as an example of a bad candidate. They could just kind of wait it out and say, wait a minute. Oh, they threw up a bad candidate as opposed to Marty Jackley, who we're never going to beat. Now we can slap someone up and win this thing. I don't understand why I understand that they want to change the convention, but I think Republicans voting for that amendment is, I don't get it, frankly.
Well, it's like the Democrat votes in the House. That's why, right?
That's the only argument for it. And then, you know what I think is funny, and I posed this to the Democrats in the press conference yesterday. I said, why wouldn't Republicans just come back next year and take that part out? Because that's what they're going to. I mean,
because the Republicans are no longer a cohesive group. The Republicans are no longer cohesive enough to do this. This is why these bills are failing. This is why the convention was nearly. I mean, depending on your narrative, either almost cooed or almost hijacked. You know what I mean? The Republican Party isn't together. This is why these bills are happening.
I'll be interested to see what happens on the House floor, because that was one of my questions, is how do you get this past the House? And you know, one of the things that was said on the House floor the last time this came up, I guess a few weeks ago, my sense of time is all skewed, was that we can fix this at the Central Committee this weekend. We'll fix it. And then that didn't come up. And so I'll be interested to see what happens with some House Republicans who might have voted against the one that just failed, but when Senate Bill 13, if it reaches the House floor, how they'll kind of weigh in on that.
Well, that's Senator Wick's kind of thing of, oh, we'll fix this, we'll do this ourselves. And he said that for like the last year and hasn't been able to do it. So,
yeah,
I mean,
it's not working.
I'm kind of over that argument of his. What's like, oh, we'll fix this within the party. And it's like, no, you're not. Clearly, you're not fixing it. The legislature needs to act on this.
I'd caution this too. The fringier side of the right is the phrases they use on like it. This is a war and et cetera. You know, I'm right. Relax. This is a generational move of Republicanism, but it's not a war. Everybody put their guns on their holsters.
I think the thing I've gotten, I mean, this is very clearly, this is about the 2022 convention, and everybody can say it.
Yes,
but
it is. It's 1,000%
is. And what bugs me, I think, is in a vacuum, like, it's easy to go back and be like, oh, you people almost voted for Dave Nafik. How dare you? And I like Marty Jackley. I think Marty Jackley is an incredibly capable, smart attorney general who has the best interest of the state of mind. And I mean that when I say that. But to just go back and, like, from a skewed view of history, say, well, how could Dave Nafik almost beat him? You know, we just had that bloody primary. I mean, you guys were all here for the 2022. I mean, Jake, you certainly were, the primary elections. And then on top of that, Laura Kaiser gave Dave Nafik's nomination speech. Like, these things don't just happen in a vacuum. It didn't just happen. You know, same thing with Monet Johnson. I mean, I really think if you put Monet Johnson, Steve Barnett on the ballot in 22, Monet wins. I think Monet wins. I mean,
what?
Obviously, all
get
things
your
equal.
Your
about,
no.
Secretary
Dude,
of State.
I will take that bet. I will take that bet.
No, I just – it was a bad, bad year for Secretary of States in Republican states.
I don't disagree
with
that.
Look, there was massive turnover.
I think we mean that differently.
And then, with Roden, I the governor just spent like 6 freaking months like trying to oust these people's lawmakers that they like. You know, she was endorsing Democrats in some places over these incumbent, you know, right-wing Republicans. And so they show up and they're mad. I mean, you know – Spencer Gosch is a delegate. Tony Randolph's a delegate. Tina Mullally's a delegate. All these people are delegates and have friends. Like this idea that they just wanted to throw Larry Roden out for no reason. And again, I'm frankly glad they didn't. I think it's good. I think personally speaking, my opinion, I think the lieutenant governor should be picked by the governor. I'd be more in favor of the lieutenant governor running separate from the governor for a separate office than the convention picking it, actually, as a separate primary office, like some states do it, North Carolina, Texas, Ohio. I think South Carolina does it that way. Anyway, but to just pretend that like, this is all – yeah, there you go. But just to pretend that this all happened in some crazy vacuum that, how could you almost throw Larry Roden out? I don't see it that way. I think it's kind of silly to now pretend that this didn't just happen. This just happened for no reason. That's not true.
You know what? That's a really good point.
It was a good analysis. It's a bit of hindsight 2020 there, but I mean,
I don't know if it's hindsight 2020. Hindsight 2022. There you go. But there's been, I would phrase it maybe. I would tag on to the following, and I guess Lee would as well, maybe. There's no shortage of people that have been saying for quite a number of years, hey, we got to do something about this end of the party. Hey. And, everybody wanted to win. So no one did anything.
Well, it took the Titanic to add more, life rafts to ships, right? I mean, it takes things like this for change to happen.
Yeah.
It takes the Obey crisis to find better laws around our housing area. I mean,
Frank, I mean, the weakest Republican statewide candidate last time was Monet Johnson, probably, and she had the best candidate running against her in Tom Cool, the one that people thought might be close, and it wasn't close at all. I mean, it was, 65-35?
We'll talk about this like something's wrong, but let's all remind each other there's 11 Democrats in Pierre. 11. 11.
Yeah.
11.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
One last bill before we get on to Lee Strubinger's podcast. Blaze pink can soon be one of the hunting colors in our state. Representative Baumuller had this on the floor this last week, and I tuned in. Pretty entertaining debate on the floor, honestly. There was some pretty funny jokes back and forth about it.
Yeah. That was a good one, and I just want to congratulate you, Murdoch. I know how much you like blaze pink, and being able to hunt in it will be a big deal for you. I'm
all about
it. It's always nice. Like, I'm too. I think it's a great idea. It's always nice. You have these very serious bills, and they're important, of course, the pipeline mm-hmm. and stuff. And I joke about covering, but it's nice when you get stuff like that. That's actually is well intended and means well. I mean, last year I would go back to the governor had the one that updated references to the females, and that stuff doesn't really have like a massive tangible effect on anyone, but it's cool, and I think people will appreciate that. And I think we are the ninth state that would do that, allow blaze pink, so there's obviously precedent for it.
And I gotta imagine the governor's staff and like Ian Fury are just salivating at what they're gonna do with this bill when she gets to sign it, right? I mean, there's just some great graphics gonna do. She's a gnome's a hunter, and it promotes
it's a
hunting.
Fun bill.
It's great. It's a great bill. It all around just promotes it brings to mind promoting hunting in South Dakota. So good stuff there.
Dakota Town Hall will be right back after a quick word from our partners.
Get ready, Rapid City, for another epic journey into the world of whiskey at Mountain West Whiskey Festival, the unrivaled celebration in South Dakota. Immerse yourself in the flavors of over 150 exceptional whiskeys, from classics to rare finds. Elevate your senses with upscale catering and groove to live music in the heart of downtown at the Rushmore Hotel. This is not just an event, it's an experience. Secure your spot now at MountainWestWhiskeyFestival.com, because whiskey legends are made in the Black Hills.
Rapid City Business Journal, a weekly show from Home Slice Audio, focusing on the business topics inside of the Black Hills, in partnership with Elevate Rapid City and Home Slice Audio, hosted by Leslie Lane and Shiloh Francis.
And now back to Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's premier political podcast.
Well, remember when our attorney general killed a guy?
Someone talked to me about our show, and he's like, at first I thought Murdoch was flippant, but no, he's just irreverent.
I'm sorry, we could set that up different.
We've had Lee Strubinger on the show, and Lee has produced a short podcast series, a 9-episode series called Short Walk with SDPB. Lee? We have a little clip we can play here, the little preview piece.
Yeah, let's play the trailer, then we'll come back to
it. Okay.
The night of September 12th, 2020 makes significant changes to the course of South Dakota's political dynamic.
Hello. 911, this is Allie. How can I help you?
Allie, I'm the Attorney General, and I hit something.
Attorney General Jason Roundsburg is heading home from a fundraiser when he hits and kills pedestrian Joe Beaver.
It sure hit and smashed my windshield.
Oh, no. Okay, do you think it was a deer or something? Did he
vomit? I have no idea.
Okay.
Yeah, it could be.
The incident tests the state's constitution, party loyalty, and the resolve of its political leaders.
Lee was kind enough to give us the first two episodes in their rough draft form. I really enjoyed them. I found them very entertaining. I'm not just saying that because, you know, you're on our show. They were very entertaining, I thought.
Thank you.
So, Lee, this is a 9-episode limited series on the Roundsburg, you know, the what happened, how it happened, and you talked to a bunch of people, and tell us how you got into this.
Actually, it wasn't really my idea to begin with. I was sitting with Stephen Groves, who I guess still works for the Associated Press, but he was the AP reporter out here, and we spent a lot of time at the sauna and the Y, and we were just in the middle of this event and talking about it. And he was like, man, someone should write a book on it. And I think a lot about how things sound rather than how they look in print. And I just have thought about all the like audio elements that are out there. And I was like, oh, it'd be really fun to put this into a podcast form. And then, so I just kind of started really just kind of going from there on it. We still hadn't quite gone through the actual impeachment inquiry at that time. So that's sort of what I was really kind of focused on from that moment, sort of going forward. And yeah, just been slowly chipping away at it as much as I can. Yeah, it'll be coming out on Tuesday.
How much do you have recorded so far?
I have everything recorded except for the last episode, which I'm going to be recording today at some point, just because of all the kind of moving parts, both with the disciplinary hearing and Senate Bill 13 that we were talking about earlier. I think we just decided to kind of scrap. I mean, we talk about it a little bit, but that'll also end up being in kind of a 10th episode, what sort of happens with this idea of moving constitutional officers to the primary ballot. But everything's recorded, and we're just kind of doing some fine tuning between like putting music in and composing it and stuff like that. So I'll definitely be working all weekend on it.
So
that's for sure.
Who did you all interview for this series?
A lot of it is audio that I've had from the actual like reporting of the issue.
At that end, there's 911 calls in this, and like there's snippets of audio from investigational hearing. You know what I mean? There's
house testimony.
Is, yeah.
There's audio from the investigation file as well that is publicly available and is still on the state website that I ended up using. We ended up in the second episode. You heard when Roundsburg ran for U.S. Senate in 2014. I have audio from my former colleague, kind of boss, I guess. Charles Michael Ray was interviewing him about how he planned on winning that primary against former Governor Mike Rounds at the time. You know, he ultimately came in fifth out of five candidates. But we have just like a big sort of archive of a lot of his like political activity from when he came onto the scene out of nowhere in 2014 up until, you know, Wednesday when he left the Capitol.
And you really do take this story from the beginning of his political career, as far as I've listened so far. I mean, first episode is all about the day, right? The crash. Mm-hmm. The second episode is kind of the beginnings of Jason Roundsburg. Is that correct?
Yeah. 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 And then that's kind of the one that really sort of focuses on how he got to this place, because I think it's a really fascinating story about how he really took a look at the landscape and realized, if I, you know, if I get name recognition and face recognition with these county party officials when I come into and there were other factors as well. The fact that he was East River and could go up the I-29 corridor and be at, you know, which is where, what, I don't know, 75% of the population of the state was, at least at the time. And so he could meet with all these people. Then he heads into convention, you know, kind of with a bit of a lead. And there were these two West River candidates, both in the North and Southern Hills, that, you know, some people thought at least one of them should drop out and coalesce around that. So the one audio I don't have that I wish I did was audio from the 2018 convention itself. I was there with Dana Ferguson and James Nord at the time. And I remember that day because I forgot my wallet in Rapid. And,
well, there was that infamous handout that came out the night before the vote.
That's right.
Russell and Fitzgerald on a handout. According to some people, it was only Russell and not Fitzgerald. I've heard that. That put this mailer together, or not mailer, handout together, that really just really spiked up the support behind Brownsburg.
Yeah, yeah. Going negative really backfired there. I think there was like an effort to even like have some kind of debate with him. You know, people from the other two campaigns were meeting with the press and being like, Brownsburg's never even tried a jury trial. How can we let this guy get this nomination, et cetera? So yeah, it was a tense nomination process for sure.
I was a delegate to that one, and I recall, I mean, that was the big race there that year. I'm sure there's other ones. I can't remember what they were, but that was the big one. And the night before was all about people just getting their delegates in position, and a lot of campaigning happened in that 48-hour lead up. Do you want to give us, Lou? Do you want to give us kind of a roadmap of where the episode go from?
So after that, The episode after the second one is about Joe Beaver and kind of like who he was. I was pretty unsatisfied with him just being like a name in a news story as somebody who was kind of killed in this very like violent and very public way. And so I went to Highmore and talked to some folks about who he was, both family members and members of the community, and really got a sense of, you know, how he spent his time in Highmore. I mean, I didn't really know that he was a big like bookworm and read a lot of philosophy and really kind of questioned society and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, and it's also no secret that Joe really suffered with depression. You know, just I came away with it as though he was somebody who really thought deeply about the meaning of his own life. And, you know, that was kind of, if he was on a quest to find the answer to that, you know, that was kind of cut short for him.
I like that. It's a very missing piece in the story, no doubt. I mean, you're right. It was, that's very respectful to do. I appreciate you doing that, to learn more about the guy that died in that way.
And then, you know, from there, it goes into looking at kind of the charging decisions. There were a lot of kind of alternate storylines about motives for wanting to push him out of office and why he was staying in office, and some conspiracy theories sort of around that. And then we sort of look at the House impeachment inquiry leading up to, you know, the recommendation not to impeach, and then the House just on the slimmest of margins actually impeaching him, and then heading over to the Senate. And then we sort of take a look forward at, you know, things that are still in play, right, between his the status of his law license and what's going to happen with constitutional officers.
The show is called Short Walk. It's available. Are you guys playing it just on a podcast, or can you hear it on SDPP as well?
So it's going to drop. All nine episodes are going to drop on the 20th on Tuesday. I'm not stressed about it. And then at some point later on in March, we'll air all nine and potentially the 10th episode at some point. But for now, it's going to be you can find it on SDPB if you search that, and podcasts and stuff like that.
His name is Lee Strubinger. He's South Dakota Public Broadcasting's politics and public policy reporter. And A Short Walk is a chronicle of the former South Dakota Attorney General Jason Brownsburg. The whole story is from the accident where he killed pedestrian Joe Beaver, and that was September 2020, and the show goes all the way to his removal in 2022. We've heard the first two episodes here at Dakota Town Hall, and it is just It's really good. Go to your favorite podcast player, type in Short Walk, give it a listen, give it a rate, and I'm so jealous we didn't think of this. I was telling Lee this yesterday on the phone. I'm so annoyed. Yeah. I'm so annoyed this isn't our show.
I gotta confess something. I was really struggling with the title over the summer, and I was listening a lot to your podcast, and you have Senator Schoenbeck's kind of quote from the impeachment trial, which was no doubt going to go into this show. How could it not?
Right.
Just a banger line. It really is.
I remember I was walking to the little water cooler, and I was listening to the show intro, and it just like, it hit me like a lightning bolt. I was like, there it is.
We're happy to help.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Well, hey man, let's, I'm sorry, Jake, go ahead.
No, you know what we're doing.
Jake, you called it. New candidate roundup. Let's bring Austin back into the show too, by the way. Austin, you still here with us? All right.
Yeah,
now we got Lee, we got Austin, we got Jake, we got my Austin here in the Home Slice Studios is our new producer. Who's running for office, Jake?
Only I want to say one true announcement of a candidate or re-election. That would be Dew Hamill will seek re-election for the Senate in District 32. A very strong legislator who I don't foresee having a lot of challenges getting reelected to the Senate.
Oh, I think they're all going to get, I think they're going to be a primary challenge from a hard right, and then 32 is going to be hard to win in November because it's purple now.
32 is a fascinating district. But not that I live in it, but
that's a tough district.
It's tough.
Dew Hamill's good.
And if I lived in 32, I'd be a voter of Helene. I'm a fan of Helene for a long, long time before she did this. But I'm just saying, 32 is a new world, homie.
I watched the House race, and obviously paying attention, walking around the district. Jonathan Oldhorse, I didn't see much in terms of just like campaigning from him. I didn't see signs. I think I got one letter in the mail like very early on. He got 21% without doing much. So it's a fascinating district.
I think
at least in the House.
The primary is still going to be harder, right? Because, like, they're, these kind of more.
Primaried.
Yeah. And the primary is going to come from a, CFLs, they've got blood in their mouth, man. They're ready to go. They're going to try.
Is Ed Randazzo still in District 32?
He'd be about who they'd run, and he'd do pretty well. But I don't know that. I ain't talked to Ed in a while. It's not like I'm dropping some secret hint here.
So I could not know District 32 very well. That's for sure.
Well, there's a brand new. It's not quite new candidate roundup, but new seat filler in Kristen Condzett, who is a former legislator.
She served
right
in the House from 2010 to 2018.
I could still hear Speaker Mickelson say her name, but I don't. I was still very new then because I covered 17 and 18. I still haven't covered the House really since the representative's been in there. But looking forward to that.
Well, now that go ahead.
She is not a new candidate because she's announced that she is not running. I think she said no with an exclamation point was her quote.
Yes, that's
she's
correct.
Not doing it. This is just a filler.
Everybody says that right away. Let's see what happens. I'm just saying. Everybody says that right away.
The exclamation point is the difference maker.
I do. That could be true. And then a couple miles over.
The other guy is,
Brian. Yep. Brian Walsh. Is that his name in District 35? Mike Walsh.
Republican caucus in District. Was that 34?
35. Turns out you could be from East River and still get appointed at 35.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, I can defend it a little. As someone who is constantly trying to find a normal Republican to run in 35, they're hidden out there. It's like an oasis if you find one. It's hard to find my kind of Republican in District 35.
He's lived there 3 years.
I know
now.
Has. I'm just being funny.
I mean, he's certainly a native of East River, but
Austin. As am I. I am an original East Riverer. So,
That's true.
We got to export East River out to West River to make it normal out there,
Easy, Toby Doden. Easy, Toby Doden.
Enjoy the Minnehaha guy in your district. We are happily exporting them.
Also, you're running. You got to be careful. You got to be nicer to these ding dongs now for about 2 months.
Not now, I'm 35.
That's true.
I mean, that's
fair.
Two Minnehaha guys. This is the Minnehaha guy. He's one of us.
Oh, man. So who was that?
They search far and wide. I'm going to keep going on this. They search far and wide. Governor's like, I got to find somebody. You couldn't find a single person from West River in that district. And you know, like, I want them. And she's like, I got a Minnehaha guy that can do it, though.
Dale Barcher replied, he would have been good. I think the concern there would have been, you know, if you're the head of South Dakota Right to Life and you're going into this amendment battle in November and you take a vote to not fund EBT or something, then you're just like, you're cutting campaign.
Listen, your old man can attest with me to this, Jake. If we didn't know, we could look in Minnehaha County to find a good Republican for 35. We were stuck just looking in District 35 when we were trying to find people.
We can start sending ambassadors out, have them placed in there a couple of years, and then we'll just have them run for it.
Well, the residency requirements written really loose. I mean, I was telling Steve, I was like, with Tonset, I'm like, the governor should have just trolled and picked someone from like Sioux Falls. And like, oh, well, they're going to move out there at the end of the year. You know, I mean, the residents, I mean, look at Brian Brightling. You know, there's not really it's pretty loose.
It's just one step short of picking one of them RV goobers who only vote about guns and, you know, QAnon. A lot of them, you can find 10 of them in 35 right now.
My dad has a house out near Leed. He could run out there now. They could be pointed out there if they want to.
Another show back power.
Yeah.
Let's see how that would go over. I'm telling you, we'll just export them over there.
And then this is Austin. Here's your hot goss. Boy, the pishky side of the Republican Party sure got their druthers into Mr. Pat Powers this week. Shot fired.
That was, it's interesting. I mean, I talked to people. Pat's had a contract with the party for several years now. I think it's been about, I think obviously he's picked fights with the Pishkies of the world and the Phil Jensens of the world and the hard right, whatever you want to call it. But I think I think it's gone on to a certain extent where I think a lot of and I know it's a voice vote, it's not real scientific, but I mean it was not close. And that means, that there were well meaning normal people who heard the argument and or know Pat and decided, you know what? Yeah, it's time.
Well, I think
to,
even Pat himself will agree that it's not really going to affect Pat's business too much. I'll say this though, for the record, if anybody cares for my opinion on the deal, the thought frame that Pat's out there that this is just some wheel grease money to keep Pat cool, I guarantee you that ain't worth the money Pat charged. You know what I mean? Like, no. It's not like Pat went to Vegas off the party. You know what I mean? That ain't happening. This is, I'm sure every hour that was charged, there was another 5 hours of free time on it. If it's like anybody else who has to work on this stuff.
If I'm a caterer and I, do catering for the Lions Club, and I talk about online how I dislike about 50% of the Lions Club all the time, then the Lions Club is probably not going to want to have me back.
I wouldn't. Hold on a second. It ain't 50%. It's about 18%. It's the same 18% we're yipping about in this entire episode.
It's probably about 30%.
I think Pat is. With the whole Toby Doden thing, he went to the wall on that. And
sure did.
I recall that when the Brown County Republicans invited him to speak, which is a very normal thing to do, to invite a person thinking about running for Congress to come and speak, he kind of went on the attack on those guys. And, the chair of Brown County is Katie Washnock. It's not like these, Katie's not some freak. I mean, these people, I think he's just, you do this for long enough and you rub people enough and you do these things and, eventually, it's death by a thousand cuts, not, one clean slice. I agree with you. Yeah, he tends to probably go after the super 18%, as you put it, more than he does a lot more. But he's I think over the years, maybe
even that phrase, go after, it's like, listen, man, it's not like he was just, there's a bunch of us Republicans that are just sitting around and looking at some of the, let's call it 18 to 30%, going, we better do something. That's not an attack. That is an attempt to lasso back to normal. That's not.
I would argue it's
Toby Doden isn't a Republican. That is nonsense coming out of Aberdeen.
Kathy Howard got 41% of the vote in 2022, despite not having a campaign manager, having about a quarter of the money.
Taffy Howard ain't Toby Doden, and I can hear you on Taffy Howard, and you know he still had to, and he ain't a big Taffy fan, I don't think, based on his post. But there's a giant difference between Taffy Howard, who at least, even though she didn't have a campaign manager, put together a U.S. House race and was an actual registered Republican, voted in Republican things, comparatively to some goober on Facebook who's a half crypto billionaire who just decided to start throwing hand grenades. That ain't it. That's not what this is. That is not people attacking that. Come on, man. You're a part of this thing.
No, I'm just, I mean, I get it. I just think, you know, and that's just one example that, you know, you go after these people very, again,
boy, I'm defending my buddy Pat.
I think it was pretty full-throated, and that's fine. It's his prerogative, but, you know, obviously, I guess actions have consequences. That's his problem to pick.
Maybe. Sure.
I do think over the years, I've been here at least, it seems like it's been a little more. I mean, he had a pretty I saw a post that someone showed me that he had about the Life Defense Fund that kind of came off pretty snarky. I mean, and that's a pretty fundamental Republican issue. You know, obviously he's very, very much in favor of the pipeline project, and that's fine. I mean, it's his prerogative, but that not all Republicans are. I mean, you know, I saw a pitch, and I know more about this than I care to be quite honest, but you know, I saw a pitch as, oh, it's First Amendment rights. And it's not a First Amendment issue. It's not, you know, it's not a First Amendment issue.
I agree with that. Yeah, I just think when someone writes a blog post about how insane it is that some of the party is trying to put litigation about cloud seeding, I don't think that's somebody attacking somebody. I think that's somebody going, ooh, what happened to this place?
I mean, he puts graphics of him, like with a tinfoil hat on. That's a bit of an attack.
When I wrote that story, I called a lot of, and I didn't just call the pishies of the world. I didn't just call, you know, I called a lot of people that you would consider to be very normal, whatever word you just Republicans.
You keep saying
like,
normal,
you know,
that's not me.
I don't know, whatever. That's fine. Whatever term you prefer to use. Who felt like, you know what, this is the right move. And so, I mean, we could sit here and be like, this is, you know, kind of. This was at the hands of Pishy, and it certainly was. But there was a lot of people in that room, I can assure you, because when I was writing the story, I called some people that I trust, said, what do you think of this? And it was time. You know, and I'm just – it is what it is. It's not my problem. It's not my monkey.
Hey, next week, Jake, we're going to be in Pierre next week.
We are going to be in Pierre next week. We are going to spend the 22nd and 23rd, Thursday and Friday, in Pierre, just yucking and yamming around, just, you know, being a nuisance, basically, right?
I believe, are we trying to set up a Dakota Town Hall cocktail hour at the Red Rosa, maybe around
loosely.
6? Loosely, a loose Dakota Town Hall cocktail hour around 6.
What does loose mean?
Meow,
like we're not getting a room, we're not paying for your drinks. Like,
yeah, we're just kind of maybe, you know, I mean, maybe a couple of you. But surely not all of you.
Anybody that's been on the show, maybe that's, you know, we'll pay for your drinks.
How about you leeches come buy us drinks for the press? That's what we can do.
We're gonna
record at the Capitol. I think Mr. Steve Willard is hooking us up with the room
up there. Yeah, you guys are gonna record in the press room. He was down there scoping out some space.
Yeah, and then we'll have some guests on, and then if anybody who feels like being around and likes the show, if you guys would like to come and say hi and introduce yourself, well, you know, I'm sure we'll be barred up at the Red Rosa somewhere.
6 p.m. at the Red Rosa. We'll be there by then for sure.
Loosely.
What day is that again?
Thursday, 22nd.
And then maybe we should have set this uprightly. We could have had the Miller Lite Orchestra here. You're doing something next week in Fort Pierre, right?
2 weeks.
Two weeks.
February 28th. You won't want to miss it. Country cover band I'm in. We're going to play at Tiger's Tap. It's going to be a nice little honky-tonk. Be a post-crossover day, so we'll all be nice and relaxed and definitely not high strung at all.
No.
He is Lee Strubinger from South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and of course one of our favorite guests, Mr. Austin Hot Goss from the Dakota Scout. For Jake in the East, I am Murdoch in the West. We'll see you guys next week in Pier.
See you next week.
Dakota Town Hall, South Dakota's weekly podcast. Episodes are available every Friday. For more information or to request availability, please go to dakotatownhall.com. Dakota Town Hall is presented in partnership with Home Slice Audio, produced by Leslie Klein. Music and audio production by Oakley Ty. Research by Home Slice Audio and Dakota Town Hall. Graphics by Timmy Grablander. Social media content by Scout Wheeler and website design by Trey Wynn. Editorial advisor and executive producer, Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Special thanks to all of our weekly guests. While we try to be accurate with all of our information, this show is recorded live and errors do occur. For corrections, please visit dakotatownhall.com. Hosted by Jake Schoenbeck and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen. Dakota Town Hall, another Home Slice Audio production.